Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Lori Smetanko with the National Long-Term Care Ombudsman Resource Center. Welcome to the webinar this afternoon. We will be hearing from the researchers at NORC at the University of Chicago who received a grant from the Administration on Aging, now part of the Administration for Community Living, at the end of 2011, early 2012, to develop an evaluation tool for evaluating the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program. We're delighted to have the researchers with us today, and I'll introduce them in just a minute. Just a few logistical things. All of your lines are on mute for the presentation period of this afternoon's webinar. Once the presentation is ended, we will open the lines for question and answer. If you have a question or a logistical question in the meantime, you can send it to us by the chat feature that you're looking at on the bottom left-hand corner of your screen. We will make the recording and the Prezi presentation available to you so that you can review it afterwards should you miss a portion or want to go back and look at it again. This afternoon, we are delighted to have several representatives from the NORC at the University of Chicago research team with us. We have Timothy Mulcahy, who is the director of the NORC Data Enclave and a principal research scientist in the Economics, Labor, and Population Studies Department at NORC at the University of Chicago. Tim was the project director for the evaluation study design for the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program. We also have Kim Wend, who is a research scientist in the Economics, Labor, and Population Studies Department at NORC at the University of Chicago, and she was the project manager for the study design. We also welcome Helene Resnick, who served, who is the president of Resnick, Shodero and Associates, LLC, and associate professor of geriatrics at the University of Maryland School of Medicine, and previously served as the director of research at Leading Age. Dr. Resnick served as a senior advisor on the NORC evaluation study design. And also Sarah Downey. We welcome Sarah with us this afternoon, who is a senior research analyst in the healthcare department at NORC at the University of Chicago. And Sarah provided extensive technical support on the development of research designs. We welcome all of the presenters who will be with us this afternoon. They'll be talking through the process that they use to develop the evaluation tool, as well as some of the results of the tool that they did develop and recommendations to the Administration on Aging. Before we start hearing from the presenters, we are going to first hear from Louise Ryan, who is an ombudsman specialist at the Administration for Community Living, Administration on Aging. And Louise, I am unmuting your line right now, so if you'd like to say a few words of welcome to folks, we'd love to hear you.
I wanted to extend my appreciation to NORC at the University of Chicago. They did an amazing job of trying to help AOA, ACL, kind of figure out how do we show the value of the Ombudsman Program. And we all know what wonderful work ombudsmen do and what a difference you make, but trying to put the science into it is really important for just kind of the ongoing showing the effectiveness of the program. We really want to be able to really show that. And through the evaluation process, we came up, I think, with some really good work. And thanks to Kim and Tim, and then more behind the scenes, Helene and Sarah, really kind of got this mixture of science and social, the social side of it together. The technical assistance group really, I think, was just really did their job in terms of giving us all reality checks about what makes sense, really, especially the local and state ombudsman kind of helping NORC to understand the day-to-day challenges in the ombudsman world. I guess I would like to say that what we ended up is with a really nice robust product that you can also use. There's helpful tools. For instance, if you look at the data collection tools and source chart, which is at the back of the report, one of the appendix. And most important is the work that was done to develop logic models. And those logic models give us a helpful way to determine, with the resources that go into the program and the activities, what are the outcomes? What are the ultimate goals that we are trying to do as a program at the federal, state, and local level? And those outcome measures are really, really helpful, the logic models. And one last person who was, of course, instrumental in this project was Susan Jenkins, who is the AOA or ACL, what we call CORE. She was the contracting officer, and she has a really sharp mind on these issues, especially with regards to logic models, and really, I think, helped us all to kind of pull some of that together. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Kim and Tim, and I think this will be a very insightful overview. Thank you.
Thanks, Louise. And Kim, if you'll press *7, you can unmute your line.
Okay. So thank you very much, Louise. Great to hear your voice again. It's been a while.
Yeah.
This is Tim Mulcahy, and I just want to echo much of what Louise said, and also to thank not only her and Susan and Becky at ACL, but also to our technical advisory group, who was just tremendous help throughout the project. Thanks also to Lori for hosting this webinar and introducing everybody. Also thanks to everybody for joining the webinar today. Our hope really is that the information that we relay to you today will be of some use to you today and hopefully in days to come. The webinar today will be led by my colleague, Kim, and she'll be supported, as Louise mentioned, by Helene Resnick and by Sarah Downey. So with that, I'll hand it off to Kim to start things off today.
Hey, great. Well, first, thank you all for joining us on today's webinar on the evaluation study design for the long-term care ombudsman programs under the Older Americans Act. As Tim said, we're really thankful to the Ombudsman Resource Center as well as the ACL, who have truly played a collaborative role in this process. And we consider ourselves very fortunate to have had the relationship we've had with them. At this time, we understand that you've had an opportunity to talk about the design during this year's State Ombudsman Training Conference with Becky and Louise, and that you've been provided access to the full report. We really appreciate that they reached out to us to include a few words when they discussed at the conference. Afterwards, Lori asked if we could present a webinar to you all on the report. And we're very happy to have this opportunity. I met with many of you at last year's conference in Utah, and at that time, the evaluation study design was just being introduced and had only been underway for a few months. And so it's great to be able to continue the conversation with you today and let you know where things stand. Some of you may have already read the report and others may not have, and with that in mind, for today's call, we'll walk you through the report at a high level because it is such a dense document, and then take questions at the end, as Lori said. But do keep in mind that even if we run out of time today with questions, that we're also available to talk with you at any point afterwards with any questions that you might have as well. And Lori can forward to you all our contact information. And with that, I'll begin. This is a Prezi presentation, as Lori had mentioned. In thinking through of an anchoring image for the LTCOP, we struggled a little bit because the program is so diverse and there is no unifying logo. But what we arrived at was a word cloud of someone you may be familiar with. It is Arthur Fleming, who is the Commissioner on Aging when the LTCOP was established. He had developed the idea for the program. And the word cloud of his image is made up of Section 7.1.2 of the OAA, which details the responsibilities of the LTCOP. Word clouds show you the relative importance of words, and you can see from that image that residence is among the most prominent. The image of Fleming also provides some continuity with the first national evaluation of the program that was carried out by the Institute of Medicine in 1995. Fleming's comment about, quote, real people with real problems provided the title to the IOM's report called, quote, Real People, Real Problems. And it's now been almost 2 decades since that report, and the long-term care environment is very different today with rebalancing efforts and with more diverse and frail older adults, and it's really an opportune time to reassess the ability of the program to meet its legislative mandates. And at this point, I'll give you a background on the task order for the evaluation design. I'll first provide a broad overview before going into each task in more detail. NORC was awarded a 16-month contract by the ACL to develop an evaluation study design to better understand and study the effectiveness of the program. Part of that task involved the development of a TAG, or Technical Advisory Group. And in collaboration with a TAG in the ACL that was led by Susan Jenkins and supported by Louise Ryan and Becky Kurtz, we carried out subsequent tasks on the effort. This included the development of a family of logic models, and these logic models are graphical representations of how the program operates, and they served as the foundation for the evaluation design. Another key task was the development of research questions and the identification of data collection tools and data sources that respond to those questions. And all of these tasks would ultimately inform the evaluation study design. There are 4 main goals of the evaluation for the ACL. These include documentation of ombudsman practices, approaches and processes, as well as analysis of their similarities and differences, the provision of feedback at all levels about what is working and areas of improvement, documentation of the program's outcomes, as well as measurement of the program's efficiency, as well as the collection of program cost data. Essentially, the goal was to develop a process and outcomes evaluation that's looking at the structure of the program, its fidelity of implementation, as well as how the program affects the individuals and organizations it serves, as well as other interested parties it works with. Other considerations for the design included methodological rigor, as well as comprehensiveness, in the sense that the ACL is interested in examining outcomes at multiple levels of analysis, including the resident, family, facility, local, state program, and federal levels. They're interested in seeing effectiveness as well as efficiency in terms of cost. And in addition to all of this, the evaluation design would be developed without a clear timeline, in the sense that we weren't sure when it would be carried out, and the ACL also didn't have a sense of what funding resources would be available. And all these considerations were taken into account when we developed this design. A technical advisory group was created to help guide this effort, and it was made up of 14 individuals. In consultation with the ACL, their selection was based on expertise in the areas of ombudsman programs, long-term care systems, elder abuse, neglect, and exploitation research, and program evaluation. And as you can see, a good number of the TAG members are composed of state and local ombudsmen, and their participation informed the evaluation. You can see across the U.S. where they are located, but at the same time, we also received wider feedback in our opportunity to attend a national conference for state ombudsmen that was facilitated by Brooke Hollister, who was a TAG member, as well as Louise Ryan, Becky Kurtz, and Lori. We also attended a regional conference for local ombudsman in Maryland, Virginia, and D.C. that was also facilitated by a TAG member, Alice Hett. One of the first tasks for TAG members was to help us refine the logic models for the program with resources and inputs, activities and outputs, defining the outcomes of the short, medium term, and long term for individuals, as well as facilities, programs, and systems. And here you can see with the arrows all the different interrelationships. While a family of 4 logic models was developed, here we only present the overarching logic model, which combines them together. And this model served as the foundation for the evaluation design. And if we read the model from left to right, we can look at the interrelationships, how resources and inputs relate to the activities and outputs that can be performed, and how they in turn ultimately are designed to affect outcomes at various levels. And we can divide the logic model's indicators into process evaluation and outcomes evaluation to give you a sense of where the information is coming from. the left side of the model focuses on the structure and implementation of the program, which is where the process evaluation activities occur. And then on the right side, we look at the effects of the program efforts on individuals, organizations, and systems, and that those refer to the outcomes evaluation. For the TAG, they focus on the outcomes side of this logic model. They assisted us in thinking through measurement issues for the various outcome indicators in this model and helped identify existing data sources and provided feedback on issues to anticipate with any new data collection. There were 9 research questions guiding this evaluation. There were additional sub-questions, but these were the overarching ones, and they can be broken out into questions for the process evaluation and the outcomes evaluation. For the process evaluation, if you look at really a lot of the structure and implementation issues in terms of the structure of the program and how it operates, how the program uses existing resources to bring about changes at various levels, partnerships in the LTCOP, and then the provision of feedback. With respect to the outcomes evaluation questions, the focus was on the effectiveness and efficiency of the LTCOP's functions, its effectiveness in ensuring services for the full range of residents and facilities, cost effectiveness at the local and state levels, the effect of the program on long-term care practices, programs, and policies, as well as the effect of the program on residents' health, safety, welfare, and rights. Throughout the process of completing these tasks, we began compiling a list of key program characteristics that impact evaluation design options. And they include the complexity of the program and its relationship to measuring outcomes, decentralization and diversity of program implementation, consistency of data, full coverage and the problem of comparison groups, the hybrid nature of the program, the reliance on volunteers, as well as variability in who is served. And I'll go through each one of these in more detail. With respect to the complexity of the program and its relationship to measuring outcomes, as you all already know, the program is incredibly multifaceted and complex, and its main outcomes have multiple determinants and are influenced by many factors and can take many years to become apparent. And the program's ultimate goal of improving residents' quality of life and care are outcomes that are difficult to observe and also not easily attributable to the program alone or even in part. And so for the evaluation itself, what are the implications? For this first one, with respect to its complexity, we would have to focus on meaningful measures over which the program has a reasonable amount of control, including short and, to a limited extent, medium-term outcomes that reflect progress towards reaching the program's overarching long-term objectives. 2, the program is highly decentralized and diverse. The programs have broad flexibility in administering their programs and fulfilling its functions in a manner that best serves their populations, and great variation exists in the structure of operations across states, resulting in great diversity in program characteristics. On this map here, we have an example of how states differ on just a handful of characteristics, as you see, whether it concerns organizational structure, responsibility for in-home care, whether they're primary fact finders for abuse, neglect, and exploitation, and whether or not they use volunteers. But at the same time, there's sufficient uniformity in goals across states. And for that reason, our approach will be to include a set of core variables that addresses program elements that are common across all states, as well as a series of customized modules that focus on specific topics which only apply to select states. 3, consistency of data. NORIS currently collects information on a common set of variables for the LTCOP nationwide, but given the decentralized implementation of the program, consistency in collecting that data can be challenging. For that reason, we'll be sure for the evaluation design to carefully review the data elements and strategically use NORIS where it can support evaluation activities. At the same time, new data collection with respect to complaint handling must incorporate guidance, materials, training, and technical support to ensure quality measurement. 4, full coverage and the problem of comparison groups. The program is intended to serve all older residents of nursing home facilities and licensed boarding care homes, including assisted living, making it challenging to identify comparison groups. But even in this context, there are some strategies in which we can pursue. One includes the comparison of the LTCOP and non-LTCOP users in instances where there are other grievance mechanisms that are in place that residents or their families can pursue. Another option is to compare stronger, quote-unquote, versus weaker programs in terms of intensity on certain characteristics a third one would be a pre-post design specific to education, outreach, and systems advocacy activities. Number five refers to the hybrid nature of the program. As the IOM noted, the Ombudsman play a hybrid role in the sense that they resemble the classical model, but without the neutral stance that it has historically assumed. But the program itself can also be understood as a hybrid program. At the individual consumer level, advocacy is provided in the form of direct services that's very typical of human service delivery programs. And at the systems level, the program engages in more traditional advocacy activities that are common to advocacy organizations, such as monitoring, commenting on laws, regulations, and so forth. So despite their shared advocacy name, consumer advocacy and systems advocacy are very different activities. As a result, we want to be sure that we approach each activity differently and to be sensitive to each of those distinctions and characteristics. And we also want to be sure that we carefully define terms and activities and use accessible language when we include residents as part of the data collection activities, as well as other stakeholders. Number six is the reliance on trained volunteers. An important feature of the program is its base of trained volunteers. In 2010, certified volunteer ombudsman represented about 88% of all ombudsmen supporting the program, and where there are volunteers, there are differences in how they are used across states. For that reason, we will want to distinguish between paid and volunteer staff, as well as the responsibilities and roles that they play at the state and local level, and as well as the differences that play out depending on the program across states, as well as highlight the use of volunteers, particularly monetizing their value, which we'll talk about later when we discuss specific evaluation activities with respect to cost analyses. Number seven refers to the variability in who is served. There are three broad categories of long-term care settings, including nursing homes, boarding care homes, and home-based care. And of the three, nursing homes are heavily regulated by the federal government, and the other two are less so or regulated to a greater degree by individual states. And for these reasons, we want to be sure that when we do carry out analyses, that are specific to the type of facility under investigation. In other words, we want to make sure that analyses are separate for each type of long-term care setting and that they are not grouped together because they are so different. Okay, and so with those key characteristics in mind and how they impact evaluation design, as well as the four goals of the evaluation outlined earlier, as well as the context for the evaluation that I had mentioned related to methodological rigor, comprehensiveness, as well as uncertainty with respect to timing and funding availability, we develop multiple evaluation activities. And collectively, they have several characteristics, including for the fact that it's very scalable and flexible, as well as multimodal, accounting for the fact that there is a lot of uncertainty with respect to resources, as well as the time frame. It will draw on both existing as well as new data collection efforts, be both quantitative as well as qualitative, take place in one point in time as well as a longer time frame, and it will draw multiple perspectives as well as levels of analyses in terms of residents, families, facilities, local state programs, and at the federal level. And these activities, furthermore, are standalone, integrated, or both. But the standalone relies on existing data. The integrated approach refers to all new data collection. And in the column for standalone or integrated, they all refer to new data collection, but what distinguishes them is their timing, in the sense that they can be integrated with the process evaluation or the data collection activities themselves can be independent. And keep in mind that when we developed this design, it was intended for a national evaluation. At the same time, many of these activities can be carried out at the state level as well. And there too is flexibility and scalability built into the design for any kind of evaluation that is rolled out at whatever level. And we'll start now with the backbone of the evaluation, which is the integrated part in orange. And many of the activities you will already be familiar with in terms of interviews, surveys, and focus groups. But what's important here is how we structured and sequenced the design and who the respondents are who are included and at what time. So keep that in mind as you think through and you listen to Helene walk you through this part of the evaluation. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to Helene, who will discuss the core and modular process and outcomes evaluation activities. Lori, would you be able to patch in Helene? I think she has to press star 7.
Yep, Helene, you should be unmuted. So,
can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you. Great, thanks.
Okay, terrific. Thank you, Kim, for that introduction. So I'm going to try to walk folks through what we consider to be the scaffolding, the real fundamental data collection activities of the evaluation. And just remember the logic models that Kim presented earlier, where the left side involves process measures and process evaluation, and the right side involved outcomes. And so we translated that way of thinking into the evaluation design. And we have two major subcomponents of the process evaluation and the outcomes evaluation, and they're very symmetric, and they mirror each other in ways that we hope make sense. So for both pieces, we have what's called core data collection and modular data collection. And for both pieces, the core data collection is data collection that would be applied across the board, that would be broadly generalizable and broadly applicable to all programs, whereas the modular data collection for both process and outcomes would not necessarily apply to all states, but they would be tailored components of the data collection that could be targeted at particular questions or issues that were of interest to the group. The process evaluation, looking at the bullet points under the bold heading, involves a number of respondent, what we're calling classes, but you can also think of them as just groups. Federal staff and stakeholders, SUA directors, state ombudsman, AAA directors, local ombudsman, and volunteers. And then when you move over to the outcome side, we can think about different groups of individuals from whom we would want to collect information. The LTCUP complainants, residents and their representatives, former residents and other stakeholders. And so one of the issues that we kind of built into the design was approaches to collecting data from a great diversity of individuals who are whose perspectives are important for the program. So Kim just brought up a map of the United States, and I'm going to try to illustrate some of the flexibility of our design. So looking under the process respondent classes, numbers 1, 2, and 3 are groups that we propose would be examined for all states. In other words, those are individuals, they're groups, they're classes of respondents from whom we would seek to collect information across the board, whereas classes or groups 4 through 9 are groups that we would sample in a targeted manner from specific states. So again, this is a flexible approach to data collection that reflects the complexity of the program, differences in who is served, the decentralized nature of the program, the different settings in which the program operates, and other features that Kim talked about. So this is a map of the state of Missouri, and we just brought this up to sort of, use this as an example for how this might work. So on the left-hand side, you have the 9 groups of respondents stratified by whether they would be for the process or the outcome part of the evaluation. And in Missouri, there are, say, 10 AAAs, and, big state, lots of AAAs, and it's probably not feasible to collect information from everybody in groups 4 through 9. So say, for example, we would choose to sample a couple of those AAAs, randomly sample, and then focus in on data collection from that point forward. Kim, can you zoom in? So this is, you know, our effort to kind of illustrate how that would work. So as I said a moment ago, the state ombudsman and the SUAs and federal folks would be, data would be collected from them across the board. But for the groups 4 through 9, we would sample in ways that would make the data collection more manageable without compromising scientific rigor. Can you click forward? Okay.
And the thing to keep in mind with that is that if the in this example, the AAA number 1 and number 9 have been selected to be sampled, and so all the responding classes from 4 through 9 would come from those areas. We would not be sampling, say, residents from 4 or 5 and facilities in 7 or 8. We would be focused on those regions because we want to make sure that we can link all the activities together to various outcomes in the model. And so it would be a targeted effort. And so keep that in mind. It wouldn't be dispersed throughout the state when we get to the local level in terms of sampling, whereas earlier we will want to get a sense of the perspectives from all state ombudsmen as well as all of the parties at the federal level and then the agency that's hosting the program at the state level as well. And then is there anything else for this section, Helene?
No, I think that's sort of a high-level summary. I just wanted to emphasize one of the points, Kim, that you made earlier about the flexibility and the scalability of our proposed approaches. And so the data that would be collected within each of these groups might be different. So, for example, data that we would collect from volunteers would certainly be different from the information that we would be interested in collecting from residents. So we have the flexibility with this approach to tailor the data collection for this great diversity of perspectives, but then combine similar groups across states in ways that will allow us to make comparisons across states and provide useful feedback to the program.
And also, as Helene had mentioned earlier, there will be a core data collection as well as modular. And the modular data collection will reflect the diversity of activities across states. And so for those states that, for example, are responsible for in-home care, there will be additional questions that they would respond to. And so it can be small or large depending on the activities of the state itself, and it will be tailored to the activities. But there will be a core set of questions that will be applicable across the board, and then some additional ones that will vary that are relevant to each state's functions. Okay. At this point, we're going to move over to the standalone or integrated activities, beginning with the commission papers. And the commission's formal background papers offers an opportunity to provide in-depth understanding and analysis on specific issues. And two potential topics are systems advocacy and board and care. And at this point, I want to turn it over to Sarah Downey to walk you through these activities.
Okay, so the first one I'm going to be talking about is the potential paper on legislative accomplishments of the LTCOP since the last IOM study 18 years ago. Often it takes several years or more to realize successful systems advocacy, and so these long-term results wouldn't be captured in the new data collection that we discussed earlier, which would focus on shorter-term outcomes. So a commission paper could take a longer view of the program's systems advocacy efforts by looking at the federal, state, and local level legislative and policy achievements that the LTCOP has contributed to. Possible questions to be answered in this paper are what topics are most commonly the subject of legislative and policy change efforts, and what outcomes have been achieved through these efforts. The extent to which successful advocacy efforts have been systematically reported isn't clear, but the data could include a document review from sources like newspapers, annual reports, the NORS narrative section on systems advocacy, and the Ombudsman Resource Center's publication. Interviews and surveys with Ombudsman and staff at the National Ombudsman Resource Center are other potential sources of information. Now I'm going to turn to board and care and a commission paper on board and care homes. This paper could look at barriers to advocacy for residents living in board and care and similar adult care homes. Under the Older Americans Act, LTCOPs are responsible for serving residents in skilled nursing facilities, nursing facilities, board and care facilities, and any other similar adult care homes, including assisted living facilities. Board and care home is defined as an institution regulated by a state pursuant to Section 1616E of the Social Security Act, which requires states to enforce standards for any category of institutions, foster homes, or group living arrangements in which a significant number of supplemental security income benefit recipients reside. However, these regulations vary by state, as does the use of the term board and care home. And these facilities vary greatly in size and the services they provide. In general, there are more of these facilities than nursing homes, but each one tends to house fewer residents. So given this geographic spread and volume of facilities, a regular presence in board and care facilities can be a challenge for Ombudsman. NORS data suggests that LTCOPs don't visit board and care homes as regularly as they visit nursing homes. A commission paper could examine the board and care and similar adult care homes, since we know less about LTCOP involvement in these facilities compared to nursing homes, and the unique barriers to and opportunities for effective services for residents in these settings. Potential topics for further investigation include Medicaid-funded home and community-based services, consumers who live in board and care homes, and the physical and social environment of board and care homes.
Okay. Now that we turn to case studies, they would enable us to examine certain issues that require a more focused, in-depth study. And we propose two possible topics, one concerning best practices and systems advocacy. But there are other areas that may be identified from the process evaluation that would be considered, and each state also has their priorities and can pursue any topic that they feel is most relevant to their constituency. Like the commission paper, the data collection can be independent of the process evaluation or integrated along with it, or it can be just informed by the process evaluation. With respect to best practices, case studies would help provide feedback to states on what works, and the selection of those states can be determined in a number of ways. One is to use the standards outlined in the IOM report for those states that meet exemplary practices on a number of indicators. Another approach is to base data that are collected in the process evaluation about programs based on how programs perform on such measures as facility visits, complaint resolution, funding, and so forth. Alternatively, states can be nominated from the field, and this is how the OIG study conducted their case studies on best practices on the program in the 90s. A second proposed topic for case study is an in-depth exploration of systems advocacy, which is a core function of LTCOPs. At the same time, limited resources often prevent systems advocacy work to be fully implemented across programs, resulting in significant variation in systems advocacy activity from state to state and locality to locality. A focused investigation of this aspect of Ombudsman work is essential to understanding the program's overall functioning and effectiveness, and the diverse nature of systems advocacy make it well-suited for a case study approach. As Sarah had mentioned earlier, the window of opportunity for systems change is unpredictable, and the time course from agenda setting through realization of systems advocacy objectives can span multiple years. A case study of systems advocacy efforts can tell us what, in addition to more funding and resources, can improve the efficiency and effectiveness of the LTCOP in fulfilling its responsibilities. And the approach offers a process-oriented focus on how selected state and local programs engage in practices identified in the IOM report as exemplary in the area of systems advocacy that's related to agenda development and modification, capacity building, regular meaningful collaboration with agencies, legislators, and stakeholders, as well as recognition of the role of the program and authority to represent. In carrying out a case study of systems advocacy, it would require additional data gathering involving additional responding classes to those that were mentioned earlier, such as state legislators, nursing home and board and care associations, and judges, and so on and so forth. other data instruments include media tracking, policy tracking, as well as structured interviews with policy or thought leaders. There would also be additional analytic tools such as network mapping or social network analysis to characterize the extent and strength of coalitions in which the programs operate or take a lead role in. Now we move down to cost analyses. One of the critical components of demonstrating the value of the program rests on economic analysis. A cost analysis of the LCCOP can assess whether the services delivered by the program offer a good return on investment, and they can also provide a means to compare the program's benefits relative to alternatives. In a cost analysis, we begin by first estimating the full economic cost of operating the LCCOP. And there are three steps involved in deriving this estimate, and they include identifying resources, both explicit and implicit, measuring their use, and monetizing the value of those resources. Now, while we do have expenditure data on the program, and in fiscal year 2010, total program expenditures from all sources were almost $88 million. But this figure doesn't capture implicit costs, particularly the use of volunteer time, and yet volunteers are a key strength in defining characteristics of the program. Of the total number of ombudsmen who carried out the responsibilities in 2010, 88% were unpaid. And without taking account of this unique workforce, obscures the full costs in operating the program. Other implicit costs that need to be considered include transportation use for facility visits, as well as shared or donated resources, such as space and potentially equipment. And these costs may be particularly relevant for programs located within state units on aging and other local regional entities located within area agencies on aging or other multi-service agencies where personnel, office space, and equipment may be shared, donated, or borrowed. Once all explicit and implicit costs have been identified and calculated, the cost analysis for the program, we wouldn't yield a single figure, but a range of figures, and we want to make sure that several key decisions involving plausible alternatives are taken into account in measuring and valuing resources. And these decisions will relate in large part to estimating the value of volunteer time. As a result, calculating a figure for each of the competing assumptions and presenting a range of estimates is really recommended rather than having it driven by a sole figure. Estimates on the total cost of the program can then be compared to existing calculations of total program expenditures that don't consider implicit costs, and the resulting difference between the two figures represents the ability of the program to leverage donated resources for implementing the program. It's highly likely that in the absence of volunteers and other implicit costs, programs would likely incur much greater costs to provide the same level of service, but at this point we don't know the full cost of the program. And it can demonstrate through these cost analyses the value of volunteers and other donated resources that the LCCOP is able to leverage. At this point, we're going to move to the cohort study, which Helene will walk you through.
Okay. Right now, the individual level data that the programs collect is input into the NORS data system. And we've put a lot of thought into how we can use NORS in the evaluation. And also we've identified features of the data system that may not allow for an in-depth analysis of program effectiveness because certain data elements are not collected or other features of the data system that could be addressed by a new targeted initiative. So we're proposing as part of this group of evaluation activities a cohort study, and this is a longitudinal observational study in which we'll follow a cohort of complainants in a select number of programs. And those programs, this would not be something that programs would be forced to do. It would be, of course, voluntary. People would be enrolled, and all of the people who are enrolled would be called the cohort. They would be followed from the time that their grievance was initiated to the point that the grievance was resolved. We would calculate the complaint resolution percentage, which is what's currently done in NORS, And then we would also introduce a new concept called the complaint resolution rate. And I don't think we have time to go into the kind of statistical details here between percentages and rates, but they are discussed in great detail in the report. And the example that we provide gives some insight into how the percentages could really obscure program effectiveness, and how calculation of resolution rates in a cohort study can really provide opportunities for new insight into programmatic features that facilitate speedy complaint resolution. And one of the things that the cohort study will allow us to do is collect what are called confounding variables. So, for example, if one program has, you know, many, many more volunteers than another, they may be able to resolve complaints faster. If one program is much more resource deficient than a neighboring program, they may come out looking as like they're poor performers. But if you can adjust for those types of variables and the differences in those variables across programs, you can calculate adjusted rates. And in that way, you have the potential to really gain a great deal of insight into this key programmatic outcome, which is speedy resolution to the satisfaction of the complainant. And as part of the cohort study, we would also have an opportunity to collect information on costs as those costs were being incurred. And that has the potential to feed into cost effectiveness analyses, which Tim is going to discuss.
And something to keep in mind for the cohort study is that it will largely resemble what Ombudsman already collecting for NORS. I think the cohort study may seem very abstract, but on the ground, it very much parallels what Ombudsman are already collecting at the case level, at the individual level, when a complaint is filed, and that they follow it through with residents or the family who filed that complaint. And we would be able to, we would need to track that information in order to get at these various outcomes. But it would be a separate activity from the current data collection that is already underway for all the programs at the moment. At this point, I'm going to turn the cost-effectiveness analyses over to Sahara.
So once the LTCOP's total costs are calculated, these figures can serve as a foundation for additional cost analyses, such as cost-effectiveness analysis, which can be applied to any number of state or local programs. Cost-effectiveness analysis compares the cost of a program and weighs them against various outcomes by calculating a ratio of costs to units of effectiveness. One strategy to evaluate the cost effectiveness of the LTCOP is to divide program costs by a meaningful measure of effectiveness, such as number of complaints resolved, to calculate a cost per successful investigation. Other possibilities include cost per consumer reached or cost per volunteer. Given that all program expenditures are unlikely to be devoted to any single task, the challenge will be to isolate expenditures dedicated to the specific activity being measured to calculate the unit cost. Cost-effectiveness analysis can be used to compare the LTCOP's relative costs and outcomes to alternative approaches that employ a different service delivery model.
Okay. At this point, we're going to turn over to the standalone activities that rely on existing data sources. And for this first one, it refers to the analysis of Ombudsman and nursing home complaint data. Louise had passed along an article to us by Troyer and in 2011, and early on in our data discovery period and environmental scan of the literature. And with their study, they focused on North Carolina and looked at the Ombudsman complaint and nursing home complaint data, then known as OSCAR, I think it's CASPER now. But it presents a way in which we can compare the experience of LTCOP users and non-LTCOP users, and they used 4 years of matched data in order to examine those differences. But some things to keep in mind include the fact that substantiation is different from verification, and that partly reflects the different roles that regulatory agencies take on versus Ombudsman. But the burden of proof is different, as well as the scope, in addition to the way in which investigations are approached. The categorization of complaints may also be very different. So these are non-equivalent groups, but those who pursue one activity may be systematically different from those who go through the LTCOP. And some of their findings, even with those caveats, include that 91% of ombudsman complaints were verified compared to 48% of state certification agencies. With respect to what I was referring to in terms of non-equivalent groups, we may find that certain individuals pursue one avenue, one grievance mechanism over another, and even that information would be highly useful and informative, even with those selection biases. For example, it is possible that those who pursue their route with ombudsman may be more frail, more cognitively impaired, and have fewer resources, and those who go through other grievance mechanisms, such as regulatory agencies, may be younger and may have greater family support. So even though they are different, it also would be useful to find out what those groupings look like at the same time and who the ombudsman program is serving, and it may be the more vulnerable groups. And this is one approach that was applied to North Carolina, but it could be applied to other states as well, depending on the quality of the data and interest level among states. At this point, we're going to move to the ecological study that Helene will present on.
Okay. The ecological study is another standalone activity that could be conducted with NORS data. And again, in the report, toward the end of the report, this picture appears, and there's a great deal of detail outlining an example, this example of how an ecological study is and how it could be implemented in the context of this evaluation. So just briefly, the cohort study that I described a few minutes ago is one where individual people would be enrolled and followed forward in time, and data would be collected on those individuals at different points in time during the study, and then inferences would be made based on those data. So it's a very individual level inference. In an ecological study, on the other hand, the unit of analysis is not the individual, it's an entire population, which is to say that in the typical ecological study, one will acquire large population-level data sets that don't have individual-level information, but rather summary information for large populations, such as states. So in the example in the report, we were thinking about the idea of theft and loss of property and how that relates to the LTCOP. And so in the picture here, state A, which is the blue line, has a problem with financial property complaints. And this is all, by the way, fictitious data. This is just to illustrate the point. And so there's 10 years of data shown for state A as well as states B through D. And at some point in this timeline, state A started getting upset about this increase in property complaints, and they instituted a program designed to reduce theft. And that was done in 2006. And then you can see in 2007, there's a tremendous decrease in complaints in state A that continues through 2010. Whereas in states B through D, where a similar program was not implemented, the complaints remained about the same. So in this example, if we could get hold of NORS data or other data that would provide us with summary-level information, we could put together an ecological study in relation to a variety of policy and process-relevant questions and examine those questions in relation to LTCOP outcomes. So this is a reasonably flexible design. It's relatively inexpensive, but the data have to really reflect the hypothesis that you're trying to examine. And another important feature of an ecological study is that you can't really conclude cause and effect. So whereas this picture looks pretty compelling that between 06 and 07 there was a precipitous drop in financial property complaints, and we know that in 06 this new program was implemented, this design does not allow us to make a causal connection between those two things. And so that's just something that we need to keep in mind and balance it against the relative cheapness of this approach and its flexibility.
Thanks, Wayne. And so these are the evaluation activities that we've gone through. And at this point, we wanted to give you a sense of a timeline. This is all very hypothetical, and much of it depends on information we don't have yet with respect to resources and timeframes. And as I mentioned earlier, when we developed this timeline, we really had the national evaluation in mind, and it would likely be different if it were carried out at the state level. And this is just one way to approach rolling out the evaluation. The length of each activity is just an estimate, and it depends on the scope of activities that would be pursued. The sequence of activities is also variable. The ones at the top are standalone and can be carried out at any time. The backbone of the evaluation is in orange, that orange line running across in the middle. The other blue activities can be freestanding or incorporate process evaluation activities, or in the case of the cost-effectiveness analyses, cohort study activities. But at the same time, there's some flexibility with the commission papers, case studies, and cost analyses, and they can precede the process evaluation and can also help inform the process evaluation design itself. Also keep in mind that these timeframes take into account the preparation for each activity, including protocol development, data instrument development, data analysis, report writing, as well as the actual data collection activity itself, and whether pilots are also pursued. And we've attempted to offer a flexible and integrated design, and even though each one of these activities can be pursued independently, we really do feel it's important to pursue multiple evaluation activities to comprehensively assess the program from multiple perspectives with multiple data sources. Scientific rigor is an important part of this process, and we want to ensure that it is rigorous and it is a fair assessment of the program. And at this point, we've completed our presentation. We're close to the top of the hour at 4. And I don't know, Lori, how we will address questions that anyone might have if you send it to us or if the lines are just open.
I'm going to unmute the lines in just a minute, and then we will be able to let folks ask some questions.
Okay, great.
The conference has been unmuted.
Okay, so I am going to ask that if you are not asking a question, if you will self-mute your line either by using a mute button on your phone or by pressing *6. You can unmute by pressing *7, and we are ready for a first question if someone has one ready.
This is Shelley Hitt in Colorado. Thank you for your presentation.
Hi, Shelley.
My question is, there was a slide that showed a sampling from Missouri of 2 of 10 AAA,
yes.
two of 10 local programs. And my question was, would those AAAs be selected randomly, or would they be selected based on, say, different demographics that each of those regions serve? Because I'm thinking in Colorado, or as in probably most states, the regions are very different, and depending on, we have 16 regions, depending on the two that, if they were randomly selected, might be a very skewed picture of our program.
Well, I'll take the first crack at this. This is Tim Mulcahy, and Helene, you might want to chime in as well. You know, I think the way we would handle this is we would work directly with the sponsor and figure out exactly what the specific needs are and the expected outcomes are, so we can get a better sense of, you know, not just what funding is available, but the targeted outcomes that you're looking to to make sure that you're focused on. I don't know, Helene, in terms of the way in which we would randomly assign or not, if you want to speak to that at all.
Yeah, you know, this is a great question. You know, from a study design point of view, you often hear great emphasis on this was a random sample, these people were randomly selected, and so on. But in many cases, there are designs that have very purposeful sampling approaches that result in oversampling of certain groups or oversampling of certain geographic areas specifically because the research questions dictate greater resource allocation for those areas or individuals. So, you know, Kim and others, you know, spent a lot of time during the presentation emphasizing how diverse the program is and, you know, all the different features that contribute heterogeneity to the program. And as a result of that, I think it's very much fair game to think, you know, to sort of anticipate that traditional nuts and bolts random sampling, such as you described from Colorado, that may not be the best fit for this evaluation, at least in some components. I mean, we could, for example, say that you have so many regions in Colorado. If you were to say, all right, we think that region 1 and region 7 and region 9 are the most important for a variety of reasons, we would say, okay, and then we could randomly sample volunteers, for example, within those regions or staff within those regions. So there are different levels or strata for sampling, and I would really not anticipate that all of those strata would be random. It just, I don't think it's going to be a good fit.
And just to reinforce what Tim and Helene have been saying, much of the strategies and decisions that would be made with respect to sampling would be informed by states themselves to ensure that we are aware of the context in which we are working. It wouldn't be divided in a vacuum in any sense. And just because it is purposeful or targeted wouldn't necessarily make it any less rigorous in any way. Mm-hmm. And it's also important to keep in mind that it can even be more insightful depending on the research questions under consideration. And we would be working with states to develop that to ensure that we sufficiently captured the context in which the program is operating. Does that help answer? Do you have any
great
other questions, Shelley?
No, that's great. Thanks so much.
Great. Thanks, Shelley. Next question, please. Anyone else? Remember, you can hit star 7 to unmute if you have already muted your line. While you're thinking about it, I would like to just say a thank you to Kim and Tim and their team. I was part of the TAG group, as were some state ombudsmen and some local ombudsmen and another range of folks, and they were certainly very well organized, and it was really impressive how they really came to know the program and the ins and outs of the program throughout this process, because I don't think most of them had really had much of an introduction to it when they started the whole process. But I think you all are very well familiar with the way the program operates now in the states and the ins and outs, and I think developed a real appreciation for how you all work. So thanks for that. Other questions from anyone on the line? Okay. Well, with that, I would really like to thank the presenters for today for being willing to share the evaluation tool that was developed with you. If you do have questions that come up over the next few days, you can certainly send them to me. Or I'm not sure if we had NORC Chicago, Kim's email up on the screen, but we'll be sure to get them to Kim and Tim and the rest of the team there so that they can be able to respond to that. So thanks to all of you for participating in this afternoon's webinar, and to also Louise for sharing the perspective of ACL and AOA and what your all goals were for this process as well. And we'll look forward to continuing, hopefully, to work with Kim and Tim in future ways. So
and
appreciate
on our side,
that.
On our side, thank you, Lori, for setting this up. This has been, I think, a really nice potential for us to reach out to some of the state folks. And I also want to echo what Lori had mentioned. I think some people, like myself, are sometimes more interested in having questions answered offline. So do feel free to call us or email us, and today, tomorrow, the next few days, whenever it's convenient for you.
Just another thank you on my end for the team. We've really appreciated everyone's contribution to this effort and your generous words, Lori, on our role in the project. And we do hope that in the future we can continue working with you. It's been helpful to receive feedback from ombudsmen themselves, and they were essential for us in designing the evaluation and only strengthened it. So thank you.
Great. Thanks to all of you. As a reminder, we will make the recording and the Prezi presentation available if you'd like to take a look through it again. There is a copy or a link to the report on the Ombudsman Resource Center website so that you can access that again as well. And again, if you have questions, forward them to me and we'll be happy to pass them on to the NORC Chicago team. So with that, we'll close for this afternoon. I hope you all have a good rest of the day.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Please stand by.